because I'm host, Alicia's not with us. Okay, so yes, that's very appropriate. Could I have a motion to approve the notes from the November meeting?
Corinne, I'll make a motion.
Okay. Thank you, Corinne. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you, Denise or Mike. And then working this in the reverse direction, if there anybody who does not approve that, can you please make that known? Hearing none, we will consider those notes approved, and you have them, Bruce, presumably in their current form.
Excuse me, Virginia. I noticed DPH is not on. Would you like us to take notes for this meeting?
That would be fabulous.
Okay. Hi, Allie, can you help us with that? Allie from DP. Yeah, Dan reached out to me beforehand. He's going to be joining the meeting late, but I'll take notes throughout
it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So Dan will not be joining us. Is that correct, Allie?
He should be coming in a bit late.
Okay. Great. So anything else before we go to Steve? Steve, you're on.
Good afternoon, everybody. So as Virginia indicated, we did have a meeting of the drought subcommittee this morning, which was very productive. So the good news is we finally have gotten through a discussion of all of our collective recommendations and findings on our work to date. And categorize those as consensus findings or ones that are not consensus and or need more work. And that's for each of our four charges. So we have done that. We've also successfully divvied up the writing assignments. So we have four charges and we've subdivided up into little mini teams of two or three people assigned to at least put together the first draft of the section for related to each of those charges. So we've done that.
Great.
So that's the good news. The bad news is the sense of the committee, and I agree with this, is that we are probably not going to have a draft ready for the end of this month. We're going to aim for end of January. There are just simply too many recommendations and findings that we had to go through and discuss to get to the point where we are now, and we're not going to be able to have the report ready this month. And that's the update.
Hey,
okay.
Steve, thanks for the update. Quick questions, Dave here. Where are you with regard to consensus versus needs more work as you characterized it? Are there items that are still actively being discussed that you don't quite have that consensus on yet?
I think to the extent that we have items that need more work, we've agreed on what additional things might need to be done to flesh those out, and it's been turned over to those little mini sub-teams to work on, to flesh out. So the group as a whole is not doing any additional research at this point.
So how do you plan on reaching consensus then? Will it be through email, or do you have more meetings planned?
We do have more meetings planned, but again, it's items. So our collective findings, if we didn't have consensus or near consensus on it, they're just not going to be form part of our report at all. It's not going to be, the mini team can go back and massage it and come back to us. It's going to be focused on those consensus findings and recommendations, which in some case need more work to flesh out.
Is there anything that you would consider significant that's not going to be dealt with in your group?
Yeah, there's going to be some things that, frankly, we're going to come back and say we need more time on. For example, the whole question of the municipal ordinances and the use thereof and why they're not being used. That's going to come back as a recommendation for more time and more work. We've talked also, another example, we need... the consensus finding is that the Interagency Drought Work Group has focused more on statewide response than on local response, regional response. And in part, that's because they don't have the regional data that's necessary. So we don't have enough groundwater monitoring wells. We don't have enough stream gauging. We're not going to solve that issue. And I don't know that in this report that we're going to do that we're going to be able to tell you you need X of each, X of stream gauges, Y of wells. That likely will be kicked down the road with a general recommendation, general finding that we don't have enough.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Steve. Any other questions for him? And let me just ask, who is phone number 7850?
That's Steve.
Is that you, Steve? You're both a picture and a phone?
No, I don't think so.
No, Virginia, that's me, Tom Tyler.
Oh, okay. So you're a duplicate. Great. Okay. So thank you. So, Mike, can you give us an update on the water quality group?
Sure. So we met at the end of November, and I came to that meeting basically asking our group, the small group, to rethink the discussion that we were having because of what we talked about at our last implementation group meeting. That was, I didn't necessarily want our team to be worrying about what the implications might be of certain recommendations that we would make, you know, because, you know, we were discussing, you know, limitations, staff limitations at DPH, and this is going to cost too much. So after we talked about it here in this group, I basically came back and right away at that other meeting said, take all that other stuff off the table. Based on our current science and our current knowledge, what do we think? You know, do we think that the existing regulations are adequate for new wells and existing wells? And it generated a really good discussion. And out of that, we came up with three new contaminants to add to the recommendation or to add to the testing for new wells. So that's arsenic, uranium, and radon. And so the process for that is, we talked a little bit about it in the meeting. The details of that I wasn't sure about, but Ryan and Tiziana both clarified that for us in an email. So I did copy both you and you, Virginia, and Dave on the summary of that meeting. And so I think you probably saw what Ryan replied with. So basically he said to make that change for new wells, this would need to be moved forward in a legislative proposal to the legislature. So that needs to come from the Water Planning Council itself. And Ryan felt that we just don't have enough time to do that for this upcoming legislative session that starts on January 6th. So I guess what that means is, unfortunately, it's going to have to wait till the next session before these could go forward. So we will, you know, we'll bring them through the same channels that we do with everything else. And I guess it will just be part of our white paper that we bring to the implementation group and then bring forward to the Water Planning Council. With suggested statutes to modify. So again, that's for new wells that are being installed. And I'm assuming that we're going to make the same recommendation for testing for the existing wells. What we started talking about later in the meeting was how we should go about that testing, how often that should be done. In the small time we discussed it, people were saying basically to make at least a good place to start would be to make sure that every real estate transaction or for every real estate transaction, there's a required water test. Most people are doing that anyway now, especially if they have a mortgage, the bank is asking for that. But we just didn't want a few people to fall through the cracks who were either paying for their house cash or some other way and weren't being asked to do that testing. We just want to make sure that that's a required thing. We didn't feel that that was a big ask since most are already doing it anyway. So that's kind of where we ended up. And our next meeting would have been on December 28th. And I'm not going to be in that week, that week between Christmas and New Year. I assume many others would have been off too. So rather than try and reschedule and torture everybody's scheduling this fall and winter here, I decided just to wait until our next meeting. So we're skipping our December meeting and picking back up in January.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Mike?
Yeah. Hey, Mike. Dave
sure.
Here. Could you very briefly explain what the current protocol, for lack of a better way to describe it, is for water quality testing for most real estate transactions? What are they testing for? currently? Is it, I mean, who dictates what parameters are being tested? Is it the bank, or is it the buyer who says, this is what I want? I want more than just potability. I want VOCs in addition to that. Who makes those decisions? Or is it in the reg? Is it in regs currently somewhere?
I don't believe it. There's a regulation on that. From what Gene Ficordini told us, that they typically recommend the standard potability, you know, panel. So you know mostly what's in that. That's hardness, chloride, sodium, some other metals are in there. Iron, right? Bacteria is usually part of that too. So the standard potability screening. I can't remember exactly what Gene said about how that gets recommended. I don't think there's a regulation on that. I do know that those results are also copied to DPH for all those. Anytime it's done as part of a real estate transaction, those results get sent to DPH. We're trying to make some recommendations to make sure that gets handled in a format, you know, an electronic format, so we're not stuck in the same situation like we were with the wealth reports with paper copies of stuff.
So then how, if I may jump in, then how does that then, or how is a new well, a new domestic well, how might that be different as far as what's required to be tested for?
There are regulations and statutes for that. And Tiziana and Ryan, yeah. Yeah,
and that's what they reference. They are actively revising those.
That's right. That's correct. Yeah. And so that's, go ahead, Corinne.
Well, I think for the, when a new well is drilled, and I'm going off memory here, but I think when a new well is drilled, the local health official has the option to require additional parameters like VOCs if he or she might, if there is, you know, a known problem in the area, but typically not unless there's a known problem.
That's right. Yep. Go ahead, Dave.
So what is DPH actively looking to revise? You've talked about adding these three additional contaminant, arsenic, uranium, radon, but what, without the absent that, what else are they looking to do with these regulations?
That's a good question. We didn't get into that. I don't think they are adding other things, other constituents. I'm sure that Ryan or Tiziana would have talked about that if that were the case. I don't know how they are changing these around. That's a very good question.
And if they're revising regulations, they can do that any time of year. They don't have to wait on the legislative session and time it to coincide with that.
That's what I thought too. When I thought that that's what came out of our discussion. But when I said that in the email, Ryan basically said no. So, what if you could just read that over again, Dave, or if anybody else is interested, I can forward this to you also. This is way out of my area of knowledge here. So I would appreciate anybody's input on this piece of it.
Well, if Ryan joins us a little later, or anybody from DPH, not Ryan, but Dan, maybe we can ask them on this call and get
sure.
some more guidance before we part.
Karim, were you going to say something else?
Mike, if you could share that with me, I'll just...
Sure.
I can touch base with Ronnie, too. She's been active, right?
She's been in the group, too. Yep.
Okay.
Other questions or comments for Mike?
Virginia, I apologize, but I have to go about 2:00. I have to go pick up my daughter from school today. So I just wanted to let you know when I disappear, that's why.
Okay, thank you.
Beard looks good, Mike.
A little too much gray in there, though, Dave. Happened the past couple of years here.
Yeah, my husband refused to have a beard because it was grayer than his hair. Okay, so now time for the celebratory update from the Outreach and Education Group. Everything I've heard was just the presentation was fabulous and that much appreciated, and you all did a good job. So tell us.
Yeah, so the past couple of weeks we have been working on that presentation, and I have to say it was well received by CACUWIC. They've invited us to come back and do more workshops with them, and they want us to write some articles for their newsletter, which is called The Habitat. So that's good, and I think having that relationship with CACUWIC is really important as we try to move different pieces of the plan forward, including having municipalities adopt a model ordinance. There's other roles, obviously, source water protection. And then if we are ever going to be talking about water conservation, the municipalities have a huge role. So I think that they were really engaged, and I think it was a great start. So we're really pleased with that. And I have to say thank you to the team. And if you don't remember who's on the work group, it's me, Lou Birch, who's kind of been serving as our chair, Allie from DEEP, Dan from DPH, and Gail from OPM, and then and also Karen Bernesca. And it was a group effort putting the presentation together. Really appreciate it. And Virginia really had a lot of input into it. We appreciate your comments, Virginia, and giving us that great updated USGS slide. So that worked out well. So I noticed on the agenda, it also said short-term versus long-term. Should they be different groups? At this point, I'm saying no, but it may be something that comes out of it. Right now, for example, we did the CACUWIC, and now they're asking us to do more. Some of that will work into the longer plan. So I think until we really have everything flushed out, I would say no. It may eventually work into that. That's my opinion, but we can certainly bring that up to the other members when we meet. I don't know if we have them. I don't think we have our another meeting scheduled yet, so we'll be looking at what we need to do next.
I had included that as a note on the agenda because it came up in our discussion of this meeting last month, and so I just wanted to keep that in front of the group, and the group certainly can decide whichever way. That was not an implied opinion on my part.
Yeah, and we'll bring it up. I think the last meeting we were just focusing on the presentation because we had that presentation coming up, so we didn't get into the other issues. But now that we have that template presentation that's gone out, there's some tweaks we'll probably make to it. But I think, like I said, it was well received, and now we'll start looking at some of those other items in the work plan that we put together.
If I may, Virginia, Denise, and your team, congratulations. I thought the presentation was really excellent. I think that we can all be ambassadors. And I'm just one suggestion is that we want to make sure we have some kind of clearinghouse, if you will. And I mean, I'm curious, how did you hear about this? How did you get invited to this? I mean, I think that we need to do what you're doing. Mm-hmm. A lot more, but I think that if member of the councils are available to go, that's a good thing as well.
Yep.
So how did you hear about this presentation?
Oh, in terms of CACUWIC?
Yeah, how did you get invited to this presentation?
Okay, so one of the things we did that was in our work plan was we were outreaching to different groups, but because I was a municipal official for so many years, the Conservation and Inland Wetland Commissions, and then Alan's Siniskalski, I always screw up his name. Siniskalski, I guess that's how you say it. He actually works for the Department of Public Health.
Okay.
So he's the, excellent. And he happens to serve on his local, I think, inland, I guess he serves on his local conservation commission.
Excellent.
And so he was actually looking for someone to do water planning. So when we were kind of feeling out with different groups about what we could help them with, he jumped right on it and invited us. And we talked about who should do the presentation. And one of the things that I will say with our group is we know, and we've put this in the, work plan, is that we need to have a team of people who can go out, and it can't always be, water planning council members themselves and or even maybe the people who are on the education. We really want it to be whoever from our work group or any of the agencies can go out there, because otherwise we're really limiting ourselves to the time when people can do that.
So. Denise, I can't agree with you more. And I think it's great. We just want to make sure that when people do go out, that they're familiar with the presentation, which is a really great one, comprehensive. It really covers the plan quite well. But no, we just can't. We all have to be ambassadors for the plan. So it just can't be the Water Planning Council or even the work group. So but I think it's a great beginning. So thank you and moving everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things we'd like to do is eventually get like a schedule and say,
yeah,
these are all the groups we're meeting with. This one came up fairly quickly because it was this fall, and we didn't want to lose that opportunity because the municipalities are such a big audience for us, and they only meet once a year.
Right.
So we wanted to make sure we got on, and we thought it was a good way to test it as well. So now we've got the template. We've gone with a friendly audience, and one of the things we're looking at is, because I served, you know, for a local municipality, I knew what the audience can and can't do with the state water plan. You know,
right.
How can municipalities, from an inland wetland perspective or a conservation commission, how can they help us with the state water plan? And so because I had that perspective, we were pretty comfortable moving forward.
No, it's great. And I think I like your idea of, and we do this with our outreach in the electric world at PIRA, is that if you have a schedule for like January, February, whatever, and then people can take a look at the schedule, and then we can get people to go out and do it, so we can kind of share the responsibility. I think that's a great idea.
Denise, one of the things that I would throw to the work group to discuss is I think it's a great idea to have teams of people who are doing this. So the discussion would be whether we would be limiting the presenters to people identified on that team, or if it were, okay, you can get the, you can download the presentation from the web, and anybody who wants to talk to anybody can go do it. I mean, you know, those are sort of the bookends of the discussion, but I think it's a discussion worth having.
Yeah, and I think we're gonna have that. We had it to a point thinking that when you're talking about specialty items, so as you know, we've kind of divided the work of this group into informing people about the state water plan itself, and then, excuse me, the sun's moving, and so sorry if I keep going in and out of here, out of the darkness here, and then educating people about water topics within the plan so that they can implement the plan. So, for example, having, you know, just educating people on source water protection. Well, we might not need a team to do that. We may just say, hey, who's doing that out there? And there may be groups doing source water protection work. As a matter of fact, I know there's people doing source water protection work. And so they could just do that. I think for the educating on the plan itself, that's where it's like, okay, what's the messages? What's going on? It seems like that's something we'd somewhat keep within our group. That said, I think we all need to realize since we're in the public sector, that anyone can take the state water plan and say, hey, you know, people need to be aware of this. I would say it would have been something I probably would have done prior to being on the Water Planning Council. When the state water plan came out, I probably would have educated people in my town about the state water plan as the conservation director. And I think we do need to be aware of that. And if we can facilitate that, that's good. But I do think that we may want to look at this education outreach on the plan itself, you know, using our products, that we may want to have a team just so that we know exactly what the message is, you know, that's going out. But that is up for discussion, and that's just my thoughts, that there's going to be different roles for different people.
I mean, I've often thought, I mean, you see all these op-ed pieces, and I talk about doing this, just a matter of getting the time to do it, but we ought to, maybe the council should send out an op-ed piece and saying, this is what we plan on doing with the invitation outreach, with the marketing group and public relations group, going out and telling that, so people can be expecting phone calls and then, you know, have a contact number and stuff like that. So something that we can work
out. Yeah, and I think we have that in the work plan. So that's part of, like I said, we kind of got tied up with this one venue that came up very quickly for us. But otherwise, I think we have a whole, the work plan includes, you know, the press releases and all of that type of stuff. So rolling the rest of it out.
Right. that we really want to make sure that goes to the council so we know that we're on the same page.
Jack, I was just going to ask you, do you have a copy of that work plan that they put together?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll probably be refining it at our next meeting, and I will make sure that we bring it up. And I see Allie's on the call, and so between the two of us, we'll bring that back to the committee.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Denise. Any questions for Denise?
Yeah, the one thing I just want to say while Mike Dietz is on is there were a lot of questions on private wells. As you know, with the state water plan, when we're talking about it, you know, a lot of it is directed at water utilities and public water supplies. But the one thing the state water plan did point out and why we have a work group on it is that there's private wells that aren't necessarily, you know, being looked at as closely as they should be from the state water plan, from the drought management plan, the wells come up. So I just wanted to bring that up to Mike, that people are looking for information on wells and what the municipalities can do. So if your group and what they're looking at doing has thoughts about that, I think that would be a topic that would be well received in terms of doing education and outreach to municipalities. Because there's so many municipalities, you know, that they're not just served by public water supply. Even some of our larger ones, you know, Greenwich, Stamford, they all have people on private wells as well as, you know, the public utility. So just putting that, I just wanted to share that I think that would be well received, thinking about what we should do with wells and educating people.
That's good to know. Thanks, Denise. I know that the private well group at DPH, you know, it's pretty much just Tiziana these days, but she still does an amazing amount of outreach related to this. So that's with the existing regulations and existing testing that goes on. But if people want to learn what we're trying to do, you know, to move forward with this, that'd be fine. If anybody has thoughts on how we could respond to that, I'm all ears. I don't think we want to just send our white paper that we did for the, you know, the well completion reports. I'm not sure that's good, you know, interesting public reading, but I'm open to suggestions.
USGS had a public outreach pamphlet on private wells. I don't know if it's been updated. I mean, it's the version that I know is more than 30 years old, but that might be something. I don't know if the DPH section is aware of that and can refer people to it.
They have a lot of good existing stuff, Virginia, at DPH, current stuff. They've just revised a bunch of them actually within the last year. So, you know, they're definitely up to date, but they just don't reflect what we're trying to do for the future.
Great. Okay, thank you. And hi, Mike. So, Dave, I assume your update's going to be short.
Are we on the interconnection part of the agenda? Yes. It's really functioning more as a placeholder still at this point. I think as everybody knows that our last meeting we updated that folks that Planning Council still wanted a little bit more time, specifically deep in DPH, to further discuss this and maybe take it upon themselves to tweak some of the original proposal or a modified proposal, and in lieu of them canceling their December meeting, we really don't have any feedback yet from the Planning Council, so perhaps in January.
Jack, do you know if those discussions have been happening?
No, I thought that was something that was supposed to be happening between Dave and Lori, but there's been no discussion that Lori has brought to the council between meetings. I can tell you that.
Yeah,
I usually talk to Lori on a regular basis, but I have not talked to her in probably a couple of weeks. So I'll follow up with her.
And yeah, Lori and Graham were going to be discussing it. Corinne, do you know if those discussions have happened?
I know they've had a couple of discussions. I'm not sure, if they've come to any decisions.
Okay. Well, we'll stay tuned. Okay, so I see Marianne has joined us and Bill is here. So Let's hear from the Alliance for Water Efficiency, both on the rates workshop and also on the water fixture efficiency revisions.
Okay, thank you. I think we're finalizing the agenda for the rates workshop. Thanks to Virginia and Dave and Steve's help and Alicia's help in putting it all together. Maybe I'll share my screen and, oh no, I can't. I'm disabled from sharing the screen.
Is that something I can fix for you?
I don't know. I think somebody has to if you're the host. Yeah.
Hang on a second.
I'm not sure I know how to do that.
One person can share at a time is what that says. Let me see what happens in with you.
The share screen icon at the bottom next to participants.
Yeah, that's for.
Yeah, when I click on it, it says the host has disabled screen sharing.
So if I make you the host, will that be okay? Can you then?
Yeah, or you can pull up what you sent out, whatever is easiest for you. We can go at it either way because we want Bill to talk through the memo too, and so it might make sense to.
Okay.
You can make me the host, but then I'll just stay to the end of the meeting. That'll be fine. However you want to do that.
Can you see it on my screen?
No.
Hang on, I've got to click share.
Okay, it says you're screen sharing now.
Can you see it?
Yes, there it is.
Fucking
okay, right. So the progress report is as follows. All of the speakers are confirmed. We now have our panelists all confirmed. David Silverstone is our most recent addition, and he will represent a consumer perspective. He and I have had some conversations about it, and he's happy to join the panel. I'm also in conversations now with Betsy Guerra at CWWA and COST and Ramana at Kinetic Section. They're going to add their logos, and they're not going to give me their list, but they're going to mail out the agenda and the registration to their members, which is probably good enough. And so I'm thinking that rather than do this now during the holiday season where it'll probably get lost, right after the first of the year, we will send out the registration for the workshop and then ask them to do continual reminders for that. But we'll be ready to start registering people. As you can see in the agenda, it's a two-day rates workshop running from 9 to 12 on both days. And we've made a couple of additions since you last saw it. We've got Maureen Westbrook now speaking about the Connecticut water experience. She's going to follow Jan Beecher's discussion of revenue adjustment mechanisms and strategies for doing that in the public sector. And so she's going to also talk about the Connecticut water experience right before we do our panel. And then Bill's going to talk about the rate model case studies. And so we're going to be starting that rate model case study work. We'll be setting up meetings with Regional Water and Town of Portland, hopefully this month, and get that work underway. So I think we're doing well here on the rates workshop. We had a little bit of a setback when we learned that the Department of Public Health had done a small systems workshop on exactly this topic with the Environmental Finance Center at the University of North Carolina. So we all were on the webinar. Jan Beecher was on it too. And I got them to announce our workshop and to have my email put down if anybody wants information about it. Nobody did email me, but I'm going to try and get, I want to talk to Lori about getting the registration list for that workshop and so that we can definitely email to those people. What we're going to do in our two-day, six-hour sessions is going to be a lot more than what he covered in 45 minutes. So it's a much deeper dive. It's not a duplication. So we just need to make sure that we go ahead and do that. I think this one was geared to be CEU-oriented, and I think we decided not to do CEUs for this workshop because we want to attract general managers and finance officers and those who typically don't go after the CEUs anyway. So I think we're ready to go. Yeah.
Mary, before you move on, quick question. It was a, as you said, sort of somewhat of a shock to all of us when we saw that meeting announcement.
Yeah.
Right after we wrapped up our meeting.
Right. and apparently Laurie didn't really know either, because it was one part of DPH that didn't, you know, it works with small systems, so it was, you know, it's part of a whole big program.
And then did that end up being a focus, and their target were small systems? And could you see who else was in attendance? Were there
a
larger facility? Oh, you couldn't
see? No, we couldn't see attendees. They did this through GoToWebinar, and you don't get to see the attendees. It's not like Zoom. Zoom, you can see people, but not in GoToWebinar. So no, we couldn't see them, but I've asked them. Yeah, I think the Environmental Finance Center is probably not going to send me that mailing list. I need to get it from Laurie and her staff. So I'm on that. I've got it on my list to do.
Okay.
We'll make sure.
Do you have Eric McPhee's email? Because I think he was the one who was helping to spearhead that.
If you could send me his email, that would be great. Then I'll contact him directly.
We'll try to get through him. Okay.
Yeah, that would be great. You know, I think small systems are just as interested in this. I mean, we are going to feature the town of Portland. I mean, that's a classic small system, isn't it? So, you know, I want to make sure we don't lose them as a potential audience here.
Great. Any other questions about the rates workshop? I think this looks great, Mary Ann. Thank you for everything that you've done.
Well, thanks to the little committee's help. They were very helpful to me in getting this all organized and getting the right context. I will be pulling together right after the first of the year. I'll pull together the panelists. So, Jack, that'll be you as well, to talk about how the panel will come together and what kinds of things we want to emphasize. And then as we get closer to the event, we'll do a dry run so everyone's familiar with the GoToWebinar platform. So we have all this sort of organized to go ahead and do. There will be a packet of material that we'll send out to the registrants. So it'll be really important for us to get people registered early. So we want to do that right after the first of the year. I'm just afraid if we do it now, it'll get lost in all the holiday stuff. Might as well just wait. You know, January soon enough.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So that's one thing. And as I say, we'll be starting the rate case studies. And then the other is the memo. So I'm going to, actually, this is all Bill Christensen's work. So I'd like him to walk you through it. This is a draft memo. We'll be sending you a final after we have a conversation, because there may be edits you want us to make as well. So I'll turn it over to Bill so he can talk you through what's there.
All right. Thank you, Mary Ann. So based on our last meeting, we put this memo together that quantifies water and energy savings as well as greenhouse gas emission reductions resulting from a change to the Connecticut plumbing efficiency standards. So just to walk you through the memo, this first paragraph kind of tees up some of the main things we did, what the primary differences in the two scenarios are driven by, as well as our assumption for the embedded energy in water and wastewater treatment. We use the assumption that in Connecticut, it's 50% groundwater and 50% surface water. So that's an assumption we could tweak if people think a better mix would, represent Connecticut better. But we use the AWE tracking tools calculator that has some average assumptions based on different water and wastewater treatment types. So the table we're looking at here at the bottom of the page is the population forecast that we utilized from the University of Connecticut. And then we built out the single family and multifamily dwelling units based on that population forecast and the ratio in the base year, which is 2019. So if you could go to the next page, I'll just kind of walk through this lightly, and then we can talk about anything you might have questions about.
So before you go on, while we're still on this page, just one quick question, because you did approximate 50-50 groundwater, surface water, but in your memo, I think 3,068 kilowatt hours per million gallons of water treated and delivered. Is that using a mix of surface and groundwater, and have different energy demands depending on which you're?
Yes. So, you know, groundwater being more energy intensive to pump than surface water, for example, And so if we changed that mix, it would have a direct effect on that estimate for the kilowatt hours per million gallons. And that's something, you know, we did a little digging, didn't find any values out there for kilowatt hours per million gallons. But if you have a value.
Does that, which you said came from AWD's tracking tool, does that represent only your sort of aggregated kilowatt hour usage for delivery to the system? Or I guess, let me see if I can ask this a different way. What are the significant variables in energy consumption in water systems? Is the amount of terrain variability there is?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So sometimes you're just constantly pumping water up to different elevations.
Absolutely.
Does that take, so that would not take any of that into account, obviously. That's just a...
There are considerations in the calculator for terrain. We kept our assumptions fairly conservative for this exercise. But that I could share that level of detail with you if you're interested. I could, you know, follow up with you.
I could probably go into
too. So the problem is normally we use the tracking tool runs for an individual utility system where you have very specific information about all of this. And now we're trying to do an aggregate for the whole state, all the utilities in the whole state. And we had assumed, you know, that we should put it as a flat rather than moderate or high elevation because it was sort of a statewide consideration. But we would be open to your advice as to whether or not that's a correct assumption or not. As Bill says, if we do it very conservatively, then no one can say that we've overinflated the numbers. If anything, we have underestimated using this methodology. But the numbers are still really good, as you'll see.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
You know, something, I guess, to back up a little bit, to put a little context around this exercise, we did this work in about 2.5 to 3 days. And the reason we're able to do that is we've done this before, so we're pretty efficient with it. Our tracking tool enables it, and we're familiar with the data. But, you know, this is the type of exercise that could probably be a six-figure project. You know, we could put an immense amount of time into this. And honestly, that doesn't mean we'd come out with much different results. But it is something, you know, there's almost no end to the amount of research and detail you could get into this. But again, you know, we did this in about 3 days worth of work. And so I just want to put that into perspective as well, because we do have tools and resources kind of at the ready for this type of analysis. And then, you know, Dave, to your point, if you would like to peek behind the curtain, I could show you the tracking tool sometime and all of those assumptions. And, you know, we could discuss those as well. So moving to the second page, at the top there, table 2, just gives an overview of the demographic data that we used in this analysis. So key to projecting fixtures and resulting savings from natural replacement of fixtures are things like persons per household, the number of full and half baths per dwelling unit. And this is all for single family and multifamily, as well as an estimate of the dwelling units in 1994. And then population in 1990, which is used to build out a forecast of commercial inefficient fixtures. And then moving down to table 3, this is the first output table that's generated. And this shows additional water and energy savings that would be generated from updating the plumbing standards. And so by 2050, the state would save an additional 3.8 billion gallons of water, and this would reduce energy use by about 14 gigawatt hours per year by 2050, and it would reduce CO2 equivalent emissions by over 8,000 tons. So this just shows if you took the two scenarios and subtracted them, what the difference would be. So there are gains in water savings, energy savings, and greenhouse gas emission reductions. And then the final 2 pages just lay out those two scenarios. So this table is the scenario as is under the Energy Policy Act standards. And then if you go to the next page, this represents if the state were to increase the efficiency levels of its standards. And so we wanted to present this to you and just kind of get some feedback. Is this the type of document that would be helpful and the direction we were going in, you know, based on our last meeting? Is there anything that would be helpful if it was added to this? Any issue with the population forecast? You know, sometimes people on the ground locally may say, we'd prefer to use another population forecast, et cetera. So I'd just like to, or any questions I'd be happy to answer, but I want to, you know, get feedback from the group in that regard.
As we understood it, this was something that maybe would accompany a draft bill that would go to the legislature to talk about what the benefit to the state would be. So that's why we wrote it in a memo for you.
I think it's comprehensive. I think to your question, Bill, the population projections seem appropriate. That's what we use for water supply planning in Connecticut. The university's data. My question was, do these tables and these projections include the prior estimate that you prepared for us of sort of estimated penetration currently of water sense fixtures that are already out there?
Yes, although, you know, one scenario doesn't necessarily include the penetration of water sense fixtures. And so a small tweak could be made to that. There is a study done by PMI that looked at that value, but the baseline scenario on the third page does not include water sense fixtures in the stock, whereas the other one does slightly.
So would it not be appropriate if we want to err on the side of being conservative in anything we produce to include some estimate of what in our best guess would be,
yeah,
whatever current percentage is, and we could, you're not going,
yeah,
to
we,
those additional savings?
Yeah, we could include an estimate from that PMI study, for example, as a baseline. We could include that in this forecast. What that would do would be actually to reduce these numbers a little bit. And so it would actually increase the numbers on the first page. So it would slightly decrease those numbers in that table. And so, or I should say the second page, the first results table, the way the model functions, these numbers would slightly increase, ever so slightly.
Yeah.
So PMI stands for Plumbing Manufacturers International.
Yeah.
So it's a study done by them.
Yeah. And that's something I think Marianne shared with the group a month or two ago.
Right. I'm just thinking in the interest of, again, being as conservative as possible so we don't,
yeah,
appear to overinflate potential savings, that if we were to include that at least as a line item somewhere,
yeah,
we can't be second-guessed or faulted for that. I guess I'd look for the rest of the team's thoughts on that. And Jack, your thoughts also on whether or not that would make sense. Anybody?
I'm here. One thing that I always think about when you're getting ready to send something up to the legislature, having served there 10 years myself, is that we don't want to over complicate things. I mean, I think that this
We would make a one pager, Jack. would condense this to a one pager.
Okay.
This is
not your first rodeo, Marianne. You've done this
before. This is a background for those people who really want it, but we would do a one pager. Yeah.
Okay. So you know exactly where I'm going. Yeah. I think this is excellent. We just have to be in a position where we can articulate it to our friends at the Capitol.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Corinne.
I apologize that I didn't have time to really read this beforehand. Does it lay out what those assumptions are, like, you know, flat terrain, et cetera, so that we can, and what would be, what the things that might improve this estimate that might be readily available or might be available are, so that if we could figure out, you know, additional things, we could make this analysis stronger.
Yeah, so it does not include that. We could include additional detail in like an appendix. As kind of in line with what was previously said, I find the more detail you provide, the more challenge you invite, or, you know, the more things people like to get stuck on, and that's not a bad thing, we could certainly lay out all the assumptions going on here. We could lay out the fixture stock assumptions. We could lay out the replacement rate. You know, we could really add more detail if there's appetite for that. Come back to you with a very similar document, just with some additional detail, if the group would like that. And then we could modify it, as Marianne said, into a one pager to be shared as a handout or something to that effect.
I like your idea that if there were additional information, that it be in an appendix so that it doesn't weight down the memo as a succinct summary of the work that you did.
Yeah, kind of be at the end, and we could just say, you know, model assumptions, so everybody can kind of see more what's going on. You know, there's certainly not enough data here to replicate the process, but we could get, you know, close to that. It's a fairly complex model, crunching all these numbers, but we could lay out more detail if the group.
I mean, I have to say, I mean, it's very compelling when you look at some of those numbers moving forward in terms of what it's going to do in terms of get water saving, gigawatt hours, and the emissions. I mean, it's something that particularly lately when we've been looking at the drought situation, when we look at the fact that we're trying to get the smart grid going, the grid modernization going here, and how power is going to be going to the consumer, the ratepayer. So, I mean, I think these are something, and the timing of this is probably good given what the legislature is looking at from an energy perspective in 2021. So, I think, well done.
Bill, just quickly, because of this presentation we just did, we actually looked at some of those numbers. So, the state on a whole, 77% is served by water utilities, and 23% is served by private wells. And then of the 77% that's served by utilities, 85% is surface water and 15% is groundwater. And I did put that, the fact sheet from the DPH site that gives you the information on the water utilities and the 85-15%. They didn't have it worked out. They had holding up the numbers, so you had to do the math. And if you do their sheet, it was based on 2012. It's somewhere, they have like an 80-20% split on the private wells versus utilities. But the water plant, the state water plan used the number 23% on private wells. So we use that, understanding that it's all, you know, these are all estimates. So somewhere between the 20 and 23%. So
here's a question. Here's a question for you, Denise. So the private well owners are not part of our utility system, but they're still pumping their water up from their well. They're mm-hmm. still using energy. It's just not the same level of energy and treatment that it is in a water utility system.
That's right. So that's where you might want to. So if you're just doing this, so the reason I gave you the numbers is if you're just doing this for the utilities, then you should use the 77% of the population. So instead of 3.6 million, it should be 77% of that if you're talking about those on public utilities only. And then of the public utilities, 85% is surface water and 15% is groundwater.
Is that by volume? 80% by volume?
No, it was by customer.
It's by persons.
Yeah, so it's probably better to do it by volume if we could get the number by volume.
Yeah, the numbers that are used that Denise was referencing, my understanding is those are all population in Connecticut. Those are residents.
Yeah, those are all population numbers. But it still is the percentage of people. So yeah, it's not the volume of water. But if you're assuming that an individual uses a certain amount of water, then you can do it based on population. It still is a certain number of population is served by surface water and a certain number of population is served by groundwater.
Well, but there's commercial and industrial in there too, So yeah, there's going to be imperfect ways no matter how you slice and dice it.
Yeah.
But if you think we should use 80, what did you say, 80-20 or 80 for the surface water, groundwater?
Yeah, it's 85-15.
85-15. So only 15% groundwater, really?
Yeah, in terms of for public utilities.
I'm kind of surprised because there are a number of utilities that pump from those stratified drift aquifers, so I'm kind of surprised it's only 15%. Every utility I know has got a well, wells in addition to their surface water supplies.
That's volume-based.
Yeah, so that's why I'm wondering if we shouldn't do it by volume.
Because that's got MDC...
Yeah.
Reed Water, Aquarion, Connecticut. It's got a lot of surface water.
Yeah.
So I posted where we get the information from on the DPH, so you may want to touch base with them on it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I got that link, Denise, and we'll look at that, and we can adjust the numbers as needed.
Yeah. I know it doesn't have commercial in there, but if you're talking about commercial, none of this. If you're talking about volume, none of this relates to commercial. So you're talking about residential homes.
No, they've all got plumbing fixtures. Office buildings have plumbing fixtures. Oh, no, this all relates. It's not just residential.
Yeah, this does include.
Oh, okay. I see where you have the,
Especially, toilets and urinals are a big driver of the savings going on. We can take a closer look at that. What I've heard from this conversation, which I think is very productive, is we will relook at the fixture stock, especially for the Energy Policy Act-based forecast. We'll look at the surface water to groundwater ratio for the energy intensity assumptions, and then we'll add more detail on the assumptions. So I would just ask everyone to consider this document that we distributed as a draft. The numbers will change. Not dramatically, at least I don't expect that, but you'll see slightly different numbers and we'll add more detail. And I guess my question would be, is there a timeline that this is needed by, is it next week or, is it a hot button item or is it something, we could talk about at the next meeting just to get a sense of that?
So, Jack, actually, that would be directed to you because it was the Water Planning Council that asked them to do this analysis.
Right. So, I mean, this will come up at the next Water Planning Council meeting, which would be January, the first Tuesday in January. So it'll be discussed then.
And would that be the time that they would decide which version of, which approach for adopting this, whether to do it in statute completely or to do it, regulations?
I would, yes, that's what I'll put on the agenda.
Okay. So then we'll tailor the one pager to whatever strategy is chosen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's excellent.
we and can turn this around pretty quick. And sorry, Virginia, I didn't mean to talk over.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say we can turn this around pretty quick.
Right, and we'll get
a sense if you needed it tomorrow, kind of thing.
No. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
I have a question just for my own edification, maybe to you, Dave. When you said that those percentages are based on customers, is that lumping an individual household with a corporation? Are each of them one customer?
I'm not sure I understand your question, Virginia.
We're
talking about persons served.
Okay, so when you talk about customers, you're talking about number of people, not number of bills.
No, I think the way they've broken it down in the table is by type of customer. It's multifamily, commercial, industrial, institutional.
But I mean, in the data that you guys were talking about, where it wasn't volume of water, it was population served, what percentages were for surface and groundwater. Was that based on customer accounts or number of population?
Population.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying my question, Marianne.
I knew what you wanted, yeah. I'm interested in that answer, too.
Okay. The other comments or questions for Bill and Marianne? Well, I think this is great. It's very informative. Thank you so much.
Okay. It was a lot of fun to do, and it's always fun to come to these meetings. So we look forward to getting this updated and, you know, getting something that'll help you out.
Okay, appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to stop sharing this and go back to... All right. So what's next on our agenda is talk about possible new topical subwork groups so that we can be doing some of the background work and to tee these up, because we'll be having some capacity coming up fairly soon. So ideas, thoughts. One of the things I think you were all copied on Lori's response to the initial email that said, if I had a wish, I would like the high stress basins to be addressed. Section 6 of the state water plan highlights this item, and as we saw this summer, the Coppermine Brook again was impacted. This is my suggestion, as well as continued support for private wells and the private well testing, quality and quantity. So I responded to her asking her if she had more thoughts on how a group would address the high stress basins. And her response was that a group could look at the details of the State Water Plan Section 6 and then initiate discussions and identification of the high stress basins. Just scan the rest of her email. And part of that would be... she thinks that it would be good to look at what other states are doing, how they are assessing water quality. Okay, this is going back to the private wells, sorry. So it sounds like what she's proposing is to have perhaps a fairly technical group who is looking at how we would assess which basins were high priority or high stress. And as if you can picture the diagrams from the state water plan, one of which was in the presentation that Denise and Lou's group did just this past week, the simplistic way would just be to look at those bar graphs and say, oh, this looks stressed, this does not. But I think that would be somewhat simplistic. That's one proposal that's out there that Lori is saying have a group looking at identifying those high stress basins. So any other thoughts? Let's just get a list and then we can talk about which, if any of them, we want to focus on.
Virginia, go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just going to say to continue on Lori's topic, and it's unfortunate she thought she might be able to join us, but she's not here yet, because I was not sure, given that sort of back and forth on that, what when she said let's address, and I was hoping there would be a little more clarification. Like, is it simply to identify and figure out a way to truly quantify which basins are stressed, as opposed to using that very high level tool we had used in the supply in the state water plan, the technical and science group endorsed? Or is it to try to move forward and figure out, okay, we've identified stress basins, we can agree that this is a subset of basins and that are stressed, and now what do we do about it? How do we try to mitigate that stress? Because quite frankly, when I saw her email, I thought, well, that's part of what we were hoping to accomplish with the interconnection and regionalization discussion, is to look at, are there ways to help mitigate stress in certain basins by moving water around? What are the obstacles to doing that? What are the incentives for doing that? The impediments, how do we get past that in a way to help relieve stress in stress basins at certain times of the year?
There seems to be an overlap here. I would agree. When I read it, I was kind of thinking the same thing.
And just from my perspective, when I looked at it, I was panicked because a lot of the data that would go into any sort of technical evaluation is stuff that's in, we're the deep is the stewards of, and we're desperately trying to get that water use data into a workable format. And we've got, starting in January, all of the registered diversions are going to start reporting on their water use in going out to all the registered diversions to let them know that they have to begin reporting. We have a lot saying, we don't use that anymore, we're going to surrender this, or that we can't find the original, registered diverter. So we're doing a lot of work to try and clean that all up and get a better understanding of the water use in all of these basins. And so it kind of depends on whether we're talking a very, technical evaluation, or if we're just trying to do a high level thing. We've also got some modeling efforts that the Long Island Sound Study is helping to fund, some HSPF modeling, which is both flow and water quality, starting in the coastal communities, but then we're going to expand it up into the rest of the state. And that modeling effort is going to be a very powerful tool in looking at the flow and the quality of these basins. So, and we're just beginning that process. So I guess depending on how technical we want to get here, I think we may not be in a position to get very technical immediately.
So Corinne, what I hear you saying is that this is a great idea whose time is not now.
Exactly. And I think we're going to be, we're making huge strides, and when that registered diversion reporting begins coming in, and when we can get it into a database and deal with it, we're going to have a whole lot more information. And I think that's within the next year, but not before that.
That concern makes a lot of sense.
Corinne, just quickly, is the Long Island Sound water quality piece of that just about nutrient management, or is it looking at all potential impairments in the stream?
The initial focus is on nutrients, but the modeling can accommodate other water quality impacts. So once the models are set up, we'll be able to explore other things.
So, I'm aware of the effort, and I think it's a good one. I think one of the things that we could do is look at the stress basins. We looked at them as being stressed from a quantity perspective, but we could certainly look at them in terms of what we know about water quality as a start. and see if there's anything that really jumps out at us. For example, we know that some of our water utilities are experiencing algal blooms. And if they have a quantity issue and they've got an algal bloom issue, so we may start being able to prioritize what watersheds we need to work in. So there's work that could be done like that. We could look at it from a land use perspective. And there's work we're doing for source water protection with some of the mapping that's being done now. So it usually takes us a couple of months to put together a work group, but with anticipating the work on the Long Island Sound study as well as the work that we're doing on source water protection, it may be that we could start thinking about, you know, what we need to do in these watersheds from a source water protection perspective. That includes things like protecting, you know, the forest land and whatever. So because it's about it's going to be about a quantity and a quality issue. So there are, you know, there are some things we maybe could start doing just in terms of what else in these watersheds besides what was evaluated, you know, in the state water plan, do we have information on or don't have information on.
Interesting.
So I think what we're hoping, and we can certainly continue this to future meetings, is that people would take a little time to dive into the state water plan recommendations, and, you know, just make their pitch for which of those existing recommendations in the plan they think we might want to develop a proposal around to offer up to the Water Planning Council. Like Lori did, you know, about stress basins and looking specifically at Section 6 and, you know, taking it from there. So, with that, were there any sections, any specific recommendations?
Virginia and Dave, when we first started the implementation work group, I recall that we had been given the Water Planning Council had gone through an exercise where they looked at the state water plan recommendations and prioritized them for us. And I'm trying to put my hand on that document as I'm on the call and I can't find it. But, you know, I don't think that we've addressed all of the things that they flagged. I don't know that that's true, but that was my recollection.
Steve is correct. We did do that. And of course, I don't have that document in front of me either, but I don't think we've exhausted that list.
Yeah. So one of the things that's kind of come up that's new, but gets into looking at the plan, like Dave said, and also looking at what the Water Planning Council flagged for us to work on, is there's recommendations coming out of the Governor's Council on Climate Change. And I think it would really be good to have a work group that looked at these. They have very specific recommendations coming out of that group. And if they're already being addressed or they're already in the state water plan to work on, should we be doing that? So I was thinking that there could be a work group that said, hey, this is in the state water plan. This is in the Governor's Council Climate Change. Maybe these are something we need to be looking at.
And I would add to that list the work groups.
It could be looking across, but I would have two groups. I would have one that looks at what WOCS is doing, one that looks with, you know, the Governor's Council, and then maybe, you know, eventually the list hopefully will get pared down, but I think it would be enough just having someone look at what the Governor's Council on Climate Change is doing and then looking at the state water plan.
Yeah.
It's a very good idea, Denise.
I mean, the one thing is that's, for the most part, a whole host of different people. Now, there are some overlaps like me, and obviously Lori is so involved in it. But the WOCs are the utilities, so they know water planning. So, and they, you know, and they also know the state water plan probably more than others. So hopefully we can, that would be an easier mesh. But there's a whole lot of recommendations coming out of the Governor's Council on Climate Change with people who aren't quite maybe as familiar as with the state water plan that we need to, you know, reconcile with.
I just did find the list as prepared by the Water Planning Council.
Oh, good. You beat me to it. I haven't found it yet. Good.
And my list is dated July 10th, 2018.
July.
And they identified seven things, some of which we've taken on. So we had drought planning, aging infrastructure, which we have not taken on, sufficient high-quality sources for human consumption and for emergencies, comprehensive water conservation, health equity, consistency with existing state plans, and private wells.
The legislation we're working on the plumbing fixtures, would that tie into their mission for water conservation?
And the drought was considered part of water conservation. Yeah. We realized that drought was pretty much umbrella.
Absolutely, yes. But that infrastructure that's a huge, huge issue. I mean, it's a $1 trillion issue nationwide. It's something that we've kind of chipped away at in the state of Connecticut through our WICA program, the Water Infrastructure Conservation Adjustment Charge we put in bills. But Mary Ann, I'm sure you've seen the traveler has seen, you know, the price tag on infrastructure.
You're muted, Jack.
It's kind of like the debate we have over poles and wires being overhead versus underground. A lot of our poles and wires need to be replaced, but it's a big issue and something we ought to take a look at. And costly. It's going to cost a lot of money.
I just want to add that we do need to tackle the water conservation piece, but one of the things we knew is that until this rate workshop happened, we weren't going to be able to go as forward with that as we wanted. So I think that's one we should start thinking about teeing up, but definitely we need, you know, the first step will be, you know, we need to take care of this rate or we're not going to have a productive conversation about conservation.
Right.
Yeah, I recall.
The fixture standards changes would contribute conservation to that mission. And so, you know, the governor's group should be supportive of it.
Yeah.
I was going to say that, thanks, Steve, for digging that out and refreshing our memories. I recall when we first got together as an implementation work group and talking about conservation, the breadth of items that could possibly come under the umbrella of quote unquote conservation, and the stuff that Mary Ann and Bill are sharing with us that certainly aligns with conservation. To Jack's point about infrastructure replacement, a lot of our conversation around infrastructure replacement in the past was about conservation savings through less leaks and breaks and things like that, greater, more efficient, sustainable systems. So I recall there are just so many things, drought planning, minimizing outdoor use during certain times of year. So we could certainly probably go up in a lot of these different, you know, down a lot of different avenues under this umbrella of quote unquote conservation if we choose to.
Again, perhaps waiting until after the rates workshop, we could have a work group looking at conservation to identify what the subcategories are and what would be needed to do each of the subcategories, and thereby present a menu that we could rank for digging into the issue further, into the sub-issues further. So basically a group to plan how to attack the conservation issue. And speaking of that, one of the ideas that I had, this similar kind of a thing, a group to plan how to take the next steps. Many folks have over the decades said that the whole idea of registered diversions is a huge issue. And it's something that we've all been afraid to tackle for very understandable reasons. Now, clearly, the information that DEEP is collecting that Corinne was talking about a few moments ago is crucial to that discussion. But we might consider having a work group to plan how we would attack that issue. Step number one, get the data. Okay, so that's a given, and that's beginning. But that would identify what the sensitivities are, would identify the benefits of understanding this or understanding that. Again, a work group to plan, not to actually do, but to plan how to do.
One thing I just thought about, since Steve brought up the issue of the aging infrastructure, which we know is just a huge issue, but it could be worth having a work group to look and see if there's any immediate projects. We're looking at a potential dollars coming in for infrastructure, as an economic incentive package out of Washington, much like we saw, after the economic recovery we needed under the Obama administration. And from a water quality perspective, all the groups are talking about this, and there may be something we need to talk about from an infrastructure. So that it's like, they're usually looking for shovel ready, but it takes a couple of years for things to go on. But if there's work that needs to be done and there's a short list, it could be something that a group could take a look at and be prepared for that. Are there things we need to do right away? And if we had the funding, Lori and Jack, what would you fund,
So before we go too far down that path, I would just like to mention that with each of these topics, for example, aging infrastructure, the state water plan had 8 recommendations related to aging infrastructure. That same with conservation. So it's not an open-ended thing. They had specific recommendations that someone needs to work on. So for aging, and we shouldn't, I personally don't feel we should be straying too far from the state water plan and what's already been done before we start to open up whole new areas where we're going to do work. Under registered diversions, for example, they have specific recommendations under obsoleting of obsolete registered water diversions, very small piece of registered diversions that they had specific recommendations on that could be tackleable. But I would suggest we go back to the water plan and look on each of these things and see what were the specific subtasks. And same with drought. We grabbed, even with drought, in my work group, there were 5 things mentioned in the water supply plan and state water plan, and we grabbed 3 of those that we thought were pertinent to work on, not all 5, or that were doable. So that's my suggestion.
I think that's good. I am guilty of, I just picked it up. I had not studied it before this meeting. And we certainly can take direction from this. I do want to say, though, that I don't think that we have to feel constrained by this, because times do change. Now, I don't think the priorities have changed much in the past 2 years or 3 years or however long it's been since CDM Smith did this work. But if something comes to our attention that is of high importance and does not happen to be in this plan, we shouldn't not consider it for that reason.
And I think,
hey,
from
Virginia, this is Tom Tyler. I have a meeting at 3 o'clock to call mess. I just wanted to add a couple things before I have to sign off.
Sure,
so I also hadn't looked at the state water plan for a while. And you and Dave had mentioned, I picked up a couple sections and looked at them quick before the meeting. And I think in section 6, they talk about the implementation of it. And it might be helpful at some point that we go through that, because I think it would be nice if we created a summary of all the positive progress that's been made. I mean, all the individual work groups, I think, are doing some fantastic work, but I don't know that we've pulled it together in a summary mode that we could present to the Water Planning Council and say, hey, look, these folks are working really hard and look at all that they've done. Yes, there's lots to still be done, but kind of celebrate the success to date along the implementation path. So I would think that's one thing that that might be helpful to really make sure people understand the progress that's been made. And you know, to give some thanks to the folks that are chairing those groups and continue to work through them. But when we go and look at the near-term goals, there's a couple that I think really stick out that could use some focus for progress on. Like, you know, we talked in the past about hiring a water plan chief, and there's some other things along those ways that it might be good to look at that. And then also, we just had a brief discussion about the priorities, and you know, it might be a good opportunity to revisit them. We did kind of a ranking exercise with them a while ago, and maybe things haven't changed. You know, maybe they have. Pandemic may have changed a few things, the way people look at it, related to infrastructure discussion we just had. So, you know, I guess I would just say it would be good to go back and look at the things that are in the plan that were called out as the near-term goals, report on our progress, see if all those still apply, look at the priorities, and there might be a couple things that bubble to the top. You know, I agree with John that the infrastructure is a huge issue, but we shouldn't be intimidated by the size of the issue, because without infrastructure, we don't have good water, right? And every utility has issues facing them. That's just a statement of fact. And there's never going to be enough money, and there won't be enough time. And every day the infrastructure gets a little bit worse condition, and we still need good quality water, and we still need money. We still don't have enough time. So I think, you know, there's a couple very common themes in there that would be really valuable to take a look at.
All great ideas, Tom.
Well said there, Tom.
And I think that maybe we could have a very short term. We have in this group many months ago talked about tracking, and not only tracking of what the implementation work group is doing itself, but tracking of what various agencies have accomplished along some of these recommendations, because I'm sure that there's stuff going on in-house in each of the agencies that are addressing some of these. And we might consider having a work group that sets up a mechanism or a spreadsheet or a something to facilitate that happening. And then it would be easier to keep it updated once it were established.
Virginia, I have to sign off, but before I do, I want to thank everyone on the IWG for the continued great work, and Marianne and your team, and wish everybody a happy and healthy holiday season. Please be safe, everyone. And Virginia, I'm sure I'll be talking to you before Christmas. So.
Okay, take care.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, I did not imagine making any decisions in today's meeting, and I think we've had some good discussions and some good ideas going on. I think that if we all agree to take our homework a little bit more seriously than I did, and actually do as some of the people on this call have pawed through the recommendations in the state water plan and the priorities that came out of the effort done, would you say 2018?
Yeah, that's right.
Those and verify that those are still our high priorities and which ones we should move through. And so that would be a little bit more focused than dealing with the whole water plan. Steve, can you forward to us what you found so that we can all stop looking?
Sure. Yes, I'll have to scan it. Apparently it was a handout at one of our early meetings. I don't seem to have it electronically, but I'll scan it and circulate it.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you. Because I remember that process and the water plan advisory group was part. Had their
Corinne,
as well as the agencies.
Did we lose Corinne? Because I want to say, now that you're describing that document, Steve, that Corinne had a hand in compiling that.
Yes, it was Corinne's fault. I agree. Guys, I got a drop. I got a hard stop, but thank you. I will circulate what I've got.
Okay. Thanks. So thank you, Steve. And so we can wrap things up. Iris, you are our public. Do you have any input? You're muted.
Just the question or comment that I asked you before the meeting started about I'm concerned about plastic pollution and just looking into the washers standards. I'm concerned about when we wash our clothes, there is the micro and nano particles that come from synthetic clothing. It could be PFOFs. I know there's a whole different committee that's dealing with PFOFs. And I guess my question is to the people that drop, like Tom Tyler, who's from the sewer, who does from a sewer plant perspective. So should we put a filtration device on our washers to prevent pollution, or should the sewer companies treat the plastic? I know I don't think anybody is dealing with this at this time, and I'm asking this especially because we're coastal, and they say that now in our fish, where everybody is eating a few grams of plastic a year. So I don't know if anybody checked into that, if that is, if anybody thinks that's a significant issue in water pollution. And I don't know that if I put a fixture on my washer machine, if that would even be efficient from the filtration perspective. I don't know that you could have a device that will be efficient for these. I could do my little research, but I don't know if anybody even thought about this.
Well, Iris, why don't I follow up that with just send an email to Tom and to DPH to see if they know of any information that's out there.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Other questions, comments before we wrap up?
Well, I'm interested also in here learning more about the registered diversions, especially since I'm serving on the drought committee. And the water plan, our water is defined as public, and I'm just concerned what happens if we go into emergency state, what happens with registered diversions and things like that.
Where would there be a good summary of that? And I don't recall how much detail the water plan itself goes into describing the history of that and the implications of having the registered diversions. Dave, Marianne, do you have a sense of that?
Well, I think the state water plan is the place to start. Okay. And as Corinne talked about, we're probably waiting on utilities who are required, not just utilities. Every registered diverter was sent out a form at the beginning, prior to the beginning of the year, requiring them to start to record daily data. And use data, and that needs to be submitted by, I want to say, January. I might be wrong. It's shortly after the end of this year. All of that year's worth of data needs to be floated to DEEP, and that's what she was talking about there. They're just about to get their hands on it. They're going to really then try to put that into some sort of sense, and so we're kind of waiting on what people are going to report to see what the actual use is and whether or not that then creates the opportunity to start the conversation about obsolete diversions and then how does one start to translate that into, you know, getting them off the books in a manner of speaking and, you know, continue to take it from there. So I think the registered diversion conversation is going to happen in short order. I don't think we're just quite there yet.
Okay, thank you.
Iris, if you're not familiar with the history of that, if you want to stay on the call for a few minutes after we end, I can summarize that for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have time.
Okay. Other comments or questions from anybody? Okay, well, thank you all. And we'll see you on the second Tuesday of January.
And happy holidays to everybody.
Absolutely, yes, and be safe.
Same to you, and thank you, Allie, for sticking it out and hopefully sending us some comprehensive graphics.
Okay.
Great, thank you.
Bye, all.
Bye.
All right.